Cynthia and Trisha. I love y'all's show. I'm actually pregnant with my second, planning a home birth, and I'm so excited. Everything you share is so helpful. I have a question about breaking your tailbone during delivery.
Those are the tools we have within us. There's no other secret there. There's nothing else that can overcome the white coat syndrome than your physiology, your breath, and your thoughts.
And this is so common. And so many mothers are given a diagnosis of hypertension, told to take aspirin based on elevated blood pressure taken in the office, which is almost always taken incorrectly, by the way.
Hi, Trisha and Cynthia. I had a quick question about prenatal vitamins.
Do you have a specific app that you recommend to track ovulation?
I'm not into apps for anything that happens naturally within the body at all.
This is exactly why I selected this question for the quickies, because I totally agree with you.
Oh.
The best app is, you know, getting to know your own cervical mucus.
Right. Which isn't an app.
That's right.
I'm Cynthia Overgaard, owner of Hypnobirthing of Connecticut, childbirth advocate, and postpartum support specialist.
And I'm Trisha Ludwig, certified nurse midwife and international board certified lactation consultant.
And this is the Down to Birth podcast.
Childbirth is something we're made to do, but how do we have our safest and most satisfying experience in today's medical culture?
Let's dispel the myths and get down to birth. And that's one thing we are not. Welcome to the April Q&A.
Yay!
Now everyone's going to wonder what we're referring to when I started by saying, and that's one thing we are not. And
okay,
we'll never tell.
I was going to tell.
No.
Okay,
no, never mind. Let them wonder. So you said you just posted about an hour ago, in anticipation of this recording, a question on Instagram for our followers. And what was that question?
Well, so it was inspired by the fact that I went into my children's bathroom and yet again saw about 10 things with no caps on them.
10?
This is day after day.
Who uses that many personal care products?
Toothpaste.
You know me, I use
hair stuff, makeup, anything you could think of.
So you've just got caps all over the place.
Caps, wow. All uncapped.
Wow. That's funny.
I don't understand how hard it is just, you know, use something, put the cap back on. It's a habit, right?
Hard to imagine not capping things.
It's hard to imagine. So anyway, I took a photo of it, threw it up on Instagram and asked our community what kind of bad habits hang around in their homes, especially if it's their partner, because, you know, we can be most annoyed with our partners. So we got a few.
It hasn't been
up for long, but we got quite a few responses in a very short amount of time.
I can't wait to hear something
people like to talk about.
Yeah.
So we'll run through them and, you know, I'm sure you'll have something funny to say because you always do.
Me?
So,
No pressure. My mom said that a friend of hers once introduced her to another friend and said, oh, you have to meet Rachel. She's so funny. And my mother stood there. She never froze more in her life. You can't declare I'm going to have something funny. Listen, everyone, I'm going to have nothing funny to say. I'll merely acknowledge Trisha. So let's lower the expectations right off the bat. All right.
That helps. Okay.
What did they say?
My husband leaves hair in the sink from shaving every morning.
That's disgusting. Okay, go next. Okay. No judging.
it's so simple to solve. It's just
so,
like run the water.
That
just
is like water. Saying, that's like leaving the seat up. It's like saying to someone, you deal with it.
You don't care. Yeah.
It's more than that. It's saying you deal with this. It's
leaving the toilet unflushed.
Oh, come on. No one does that. You know what, Trisha, you just took this up a level to places no one wants to go. Who leaves it unflushed?
I mean, if you live in an old house with an old septic system, sometimes you can't
put
that much water through the septic
system. That is
not
a thing.
That's a bad habit. Women, mothers, please teach your sons to put the seat down.
Oh, heck yeah.
That's like a major red flag.
Yeah.
They leave the seat up.
Yep.
Okay. My husband burps under his breath and thinks I don't notice. And then I smell what he ate.
Gross. Nope. We're not doing this one. I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. Next.
That's too gross.
Nope. Didn't happen. I didn't hear that. Go next.
That's really bad.
Nope.
I repeat myself to my family and friends constantly. I'm mortified, but I can't seem to stop.
Oh, and as like a verbal thing?
I think so.
Yeah, I get that. I've caught myself doing that.
I think you can work on that with meditation, awareness, like just, you know, becoming more aware of present in the moment. Maybe
easy solution. Take up meditation.
It always comes back to meditation, folks.
All right.
My husband uses a new cup every time he pours a drink. Every time.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
No, really? What? No.
Well, I mean, okay, no, not every time, but
you'd go through 15 glasses in a day.
I had to have a talk with my husband a few months ago because he got this habit from his own lovely mom, where in which he walks into the kitchen and he says things like, where did all these glasses come from? Because like, I'll have my glass of water in the morning and someone else will. And then midday, I'm not sure which is mine. And I grab another one. And if they're not in the dishwasher yet, he's like, where? And I said to him, you don't have to keep commenting on how many glasses are out. It's
just pick them up and put them in the dishwasher.
It's just really not a huge deal. Like, we don't have to keep hearing, oh no, like there's going to be a comment about how many glasses are out. If four people live in the house, there may be more than four glasses at the end of the day. But okay, every time that sounds every a little time, OCD. I mean, if that's literal, it's OCD. Okay, what's next?
My husband throws a wet towel up high on a random door of the house, and it's never near the bathroom.
What? Random door?
The question is, where is he going in his towel, and how does he get back to the bathroom without it?
Yeah, he just walks naked.
I guess so.
So he comes out of the shower. I'm going to tell you how this goes. I got it all mapped out in my mind. They have a big house. He comes out of the shower. He dries off. He starts roaming around the big house. He ends up on another floor. He ends up on another floor and he goes, yeah, I'll leave it here. He walks upstairs naked with his cup of coffee. Dark naked and slowly takes his time walking back through the house. And the whole time he's thinking, now if she sees me, she's going to want to have me right now.
Oh, right.
Because that's how men think.
Good luck.
She's going to not be able to resist. Okay. What's really happening is she's got other stuff on her mind. She doesn't really notice him walking through the house naked, but then she encounters the towel and she's furious.
That's right.
And then later at night, she's still resentful and doesn't want to have sex with him because of the towel. So the irony is just incredible.
We got it all figured out here. Okay. I take people's drinking glasses before they're done to load in the dishwasher. Oof, that's my mother. You can't set anything down. It's just swiped, gone. You set it down, gone.
If it's half full, will she take it?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, come on.
No, it's true. Not in my house, but in her home.
Well, she's clean. She's tidy.
Uh-huh. We used to call her the Hoover Hall Monitor. It was like a vacuum. She saw something and it was sucked up, gone, disappeared. Don't.
My dad used to say, if I get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, Rachel will make the bed.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Making your bed is a great habit, though. That's one of the best habits you can implement in your life.
We're religious about it. Whoever gets up later makes the bed.
Uh-huh. That's always me in my house. Mm-hmm. All right. What else? Not putting items back where they belong. I think that's super common, but
I don't like that at all.
The slogan in my house is everything has a place. We got a few more, but that's probably enough, huh?
I don't know. Any good ones?
Nail biting. Try to break that habit. I don't close cabinets.
Oh my gosh. My friend and I both do that.
You leave cabinets open?
I've left cabinets open. What? It's so weird. Mm-hmm. It's so strange. Yeah. She does it like crazy. Like she has sent me photos of like 7 or 8 cabinets in her kitchen, just open doors and cabinets open.
Wow. Yep.
But I've caught myself every now and then. I've caught myself with my spice cabinet if I'm cooking and I'll look over and I'll say, oh my God, I didn't close it. It's open. It's still open. I'll grab my spices and I'll walk away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You really don't like this about me, do you?
Well, I've never seen your cabinets open in your house. I just kind of can't.
I don't
fathom,
live like that. I noticed that, like, I left them open and I closed them. I don't go to bed with cabinets open in my kitchen.
It's like the refrigerator. Like you open it, you take something out, you close it. It's not like automated. The refrigerator.
I do it with certain cabinets, of course, glasses, dishes, always closed. Spice cabinet. That's the most common one I'll leave open. Yep.
I do it with closet doors. I do it with my closet doors.
Oh, I don't do it with closet doors.
I do it with my closet doors. So now I get it. That's the only thing I do it with, though. Put sturdy laundry literally everywhere. but nice. In the basket.
Lovely. Charming.
It's so easy to put it in the basket.
I keep falling in love with you more every day kind of stuff.
My husband leaves water bottles, empty water bottles, everywhere.
That sounds like plastic.
No plastic water bottles. Get rid of the plastic water bottles. They're not good for you anyway. Get him
They're not good for one water bottle
that he has to reuse.
All right, let's go.
Let's
what
go.
Do we have? Oh, wait, I'm the
you
one.
Have who- something.
All right. Okay, we got some comment or question about a birth, and I wanted to play this first because it wasn't an official traditional type of question. So let's play this. All right, hang on.
Hi, Trisha and Cynthia. My name is Desi. I'm calling for a couple reasons. So I just wanted to say that I had what I would call a pain-free birth, but it was also only 6 hours. So it was pretty quick. And maybe I would have handled it differently if it were very long. But I didn't have that moment that you talk about where you wonder if you can get through it. I didn't have that moment. Everything just went. It was great. It was amazing. Sorry. I also want to say thank you for what you guys do, because it's pretty incredible. And I don't think I would have had the birth that I had I not found your podcast. And it just really changed my life. I had a breech baby vaginally with no interventions and no medication at Yale, actually. I was able to do that because I heard Dr. Stewart on the podcast, and that sent me down this rabbit hole of breech, and then my baby did not turn. And then I listened to, I think it was Cynthia's story. Maybe I'm getting that wrong. I had this incredible vaginal breech birth. I went through so many things just in that process in the last trimester. So I just wanted to call in and let you guys know that. Okay, that's it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone listening, for ever sharing any one of our episodes with anyone, because she learned about our podcast from a friend, which changed her entire birth experience. She had a breech birth at Yale New Haven Hospital, vaginally,
of all places.
Amazing. Like, and if she hadn't learned what she learned and heard the podcast with Dr. Stu, she would have had a C-section. And look how much it transformed her life.
Trisha, what episode number was that?
You know I don't keep track of that.
Okay, that was episode 128. And I remember it because we did our, what do we call those? Like the trilogy episodes, 118, 124, and 129. And he was right before the third trimester red flags episode. It was episode 128. And yes, it was Cynthia's birth story episode 236. And I have a fun fact I'm going to squeeze in here just because I feel like it. Not only did that episode come out on my birthday, October 11th of 2023, but fun fact, my husband and I grew up in different states, and we both grew up in house number 236. I'm glad to hear those two episodes encourage her to do her research and have her breech birth at Yale of all places. Surprises you, right?
Totally, totally surprises me. I would love to know who attended that birth. We'll have to find out.
And yes, it's a common phenomenon that women experience some feelings around escaping, running away, giving up, changing their birth plan in the very last moments before the baby is born or during transition. But by no means is that every woman's experience. It's just very common. And we just want to remind women when they experience it, they are very close to having their babies. But there are many, many women who never experience anything like that. Their babies just slip out. The birth is completely comfortable, uneventful, in many cases, pleasurable. Truly, everything exists in birth. Every possibility exists. There are no generalizations we can make at all. But it is common for many.
Hey, y'all. I just found out I'm pregnant with my third kid. And I was wondering, so my first kid I had in the hospital, it was a mess. I had a 5-hour induced labor. My second kid, I had a home birth. It was 2 hours and 45 minutes for labor. Do you think that I should plan for a really quick labor this time around? Thanks, guys.
Well, you know what everybody says.
They say you never know what you're going to get with the third baby.
They say they're the wild card.
I don't like that.
I know you don't.
I don't like to put any preconceived notions in anyone's minds, for one. But also, you could always say that. You could say that about a second birth. They're invariably different from the first birth. If the first birth is super long, the second one can be like an hour. I mean,
well, it's more the idea that the second baby usually almost always comes faster than the first baby. That's right. A given.
Everybody so it wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. Yeah. But go ahead.
The vast majority of the time it is.
Yes.
The third baby would then be presumed to come faster than right. the second. And that's not always the case. That's what the wild card means. So yes, she had a very fast, technically precipitous second birth at home. And so yes, she should call her midwife the moment she thinks she's in labor, because the midwife would much prefer to know and show up a little early than miss the third birth. And it may or may not be faster. It may or may not. But right. it can't hurt to be err on the side of assuming that it will be and let the midwife know sooner. But it does sound like she could potentially have a very quick third birth, and you should be prepared for that.
Hi, Cynthia and Tricia. I was wondering, I wanted to ask a question about pain in labor and as it relates to tools like hypnobirthing. I understand how theoretically you could use those tools, and when a woman is able to have a completely physiologic birth experience, how that could be transformative, and you could describe that experience as being completely pain-free. I'm curious, I totally grew up around that culture of birth, really believing in my body's ability, completely unafraid. And as it turned out, I did have to give birth in a high-risk setting, and was subjected to a lot of interventions, some of which were absolutely necessary. What really took me by surprise when I ended up with an induction, which we all know, if we listen to your show, at least that is best avoided when possible. But in my case, when I did end up being induced, what really took me by surprise was how incredibly painful it was. I was not quite prepared. And I guess my question, I know I keep talking about hypnobirthing because I know, Cynthia, you're somewhat of an expert in it, but I'm just wondering if you have seen in your experience or heard talking to women whether using techniques like hypnobirthing or other coping mechanisms has been beneficial and helped to reduce pain and create a more, for lack of a better word, peaceful birth experience, even in the case of having to have medical intervention, actually, in your experience, having worked with so many. I'm really curious if you have any thoughts about this. I would love to hear what you have to say. Thank you so much. Love your show, and bye-bye.
All right. I have two things to say about this. First of all, yes, I know hypnobirthing well. I've been teaching it for 18 years now, and I've taught thousands of couples. And there's no question that when you learn the techniques through hypnobirthing or yoga or however else to truly harness your focus, it's not just the breathing and the physiology. Those are very big, but focus is the key. That is really the key. When you truly learn to control and focus and practice these three things together, you can overcome anything. There have been women who had C-sections under this state of mind. You can call it hypnosis or any deep relaxation. Root canals, truly. I know someone who has.
Do you mean without anesthesia?
Yes. Yes. And that is not something I would be willing to do, because I have a belief that we're not meant to endure dental work. So for me, that's truly the one area that I can think of, the one common area where I would say, okay, no, this is not something I personally don't have a belief that I can overcome dental work like a root canal without anesthesia. But people have. Back to just the norm of childbirth, even those with Pitocin and really difficult things to overcome, the techniques fully apply and fully work. I just want to emphasize, I always emphasize to my own clients in my classes, focus is the one everyone wants to spend the least amount of attention on, because it's the hardest one. It's as hard as meditation itself. Breathing is easy to control. Physiology is fairly easy to control. Making sure you're not making fists, not connecting your upper row of teeth to your lower row of teeth, these little things we learn. But focus is the one where if you're really going to practice focus, you can move mountains. I mean, people have been able to slow their breathing to the point where they're underwater for minutes, something that's unthinkable to most of us. But that's how they do it with these techniques. The other thing I want to comment on is this rhetoric we hear around hypnobirthing, this conversation around hypnobirthing of pain-free birth. That's something I would never say. And no clients of mine have ever heard me say pain-free for two reasons. One, If you say the word pain, you think the word pain. When you go get a lovely massage, you don't walk away and go, oh my gosh, I didn't have any pain at all in that massage. So I don't condition my clients to think of their birth as pain-free, because then it's around the concept of pain. That's an injustice to anyone who wants to have a comfortable birth. So it doesn't make sense. Once you understand how the subconscious mind works, you would never use the word pain any more than if you help your child study for an intense exam. You don't assure them they're not going to fail. They're not going to fail. They're not going to fail.
You focus on what you want, not what you don't want.
That's how the subconscious works, whether we like it or not. Our conscious minds like both of those approaches, but the subconscious only wants to hear what we seek. If you don't say to a couple on their wedding day, I really don't think you guys are going to get divorced. I just don't see divorce for you two. The couple would be like, what? They would still hear it as an offense because you're
going to have a divorce-free marriage.
Exactly. That is how the unconscious works. It's better to say to your partner, please remember we have plans tomorrow night, than don't forget we have plans. If you're directing someone on a road trip, you say, make a right. You don't say, okay, don't make a left up here. They will hear left before they understand anything else. And the final point I want to make is, if I were to tell my clients that hypnobirthing will bring them a pain-free birth, as so many hypnobirthing instructors do, they say your birth will be quicker, it'll be pain-free. What is that woman supposed to think later when she has a long labor or a very difficult labor? Who am I to define how her birth should feel? And I don't want her to conclude postpartum. She failed the method because she interpreted her experience as painful.
Well said.
Well, I mean, I had a lot to say because this is my work and this is what I teach. I can't give a short answer for that, Trisha. I know what you're thinking.
It's okay. No.
I'm thinking that was long, but it wasn't a quickie. I don't have a quickie to everything.
It was good. It was well thought out. It was well explained.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm currently 20 weeks pregnant with my first baby due in June. I recently wanted to transfer my care to a birthing center located in a hospital. They said they would not accept me as a patient because I had two elevated blood pressure readings in the office with my previous care provider. Both were anxiety induced. I monitor my blood pressure at home throughout the day, and all the readings are normal. I told the midwife this, and she recommended that I take a baby aspirin daily, even though the high readings were situational. She will have the head midwife review my chart and see if I qualify for the birthing center. Any tips on how to overcome white coat syndrome, and what are your thoughts on taking a baby aspirin? Thank you.
Okay, let's address the question about the baby aspirin first, because first of all, baby aspirin is only recommended if you have chronic hypertension in the prevention of preeclampsia. She does not have chronic hypertension. She has possibly gestational hypertension, but more likely white coat hypertension, because she has already stated that when she takes her blood pressure at home, it is normal. And this is so common. So many mothers are given a diagnosis of hypertension, told to take aspirin, even a diagnosis of preeclampsia, based on elevated blood pressure taken in the office, which is almost always taken incorrectly, by the way.
There
is a very specific way to take blood pressure, which involves letting women sit still quietly for 10 minutes in a certain position with their feet firmly planted on the floor and taking three measurements of blood pressure.
You have to be kidding.
The first and averaging the second two.
I've never experienced that
Who
in my whole life.
Has ever had their blood pressure taken that way in an office?
Never.
No. So nobody's taking blood pressure correctly.
Wow. That's interesting.
Right?
That's incredible. Yeah. And then they're making major diagnoses based on these readings.
They're changing your course of your care based on in elevated blood pressure because you're uncomfortable, nervous, whatever. I mean, blood pressure is going to elevate in those situations. So... She does not likely need to take aspirin. She doesn't need to take aspirin because she doesn't have elevated blood pressure. And she should not risk out of the birth center.
Well, as far as the white coat syndrome, I want women to understand that while that is real, they can always control their thoughts and physiology. And again, it's not that this is easy. It's very simple. There's nothing sophisticated to it. But you have to go through the practice and the effort of learning the tools to control your blood pressure. It can be done. And the way to do that is really, it's just like the three things I referenced a few minutes ago, it's controlling your breath. So in for four, slowly to full lungs, out for eight, in for four, out for eight. That does calm the nervous system. That's a fact. We've known this for like apparently a couple thousand years. And relaxing your physiology. So making sure you're not clenching in any area of your body. You're relaxing your eyelids. You're relaxing your jaw. And then the focus. Visualize something that makes you feel calm and peaceful. Whatever that is. If it's like visualize petting your dog, whatever it is. But when you sit there and tell yourself, I have white coat syndrome. Oh my gosh, my blood pressure is going to go up because I'm in this office. That will contribute to your physiology. And it's the best we can do. There's no other magic secret to it. If you can't get past the results that way, then it's on to planning a different kind of birth. But those are the tools we have within us. There's no other secret there. There's nothing else that can overcome the white coat syndrome than your physiology, your breath, and your thoughts.
Or just not having someone else take your blood pressure and doing it yourself.
Right. But I mean,
perfectly capable of that.
Right. But how many women do that? I mean, I wouldn't have been taking my blood pressure at home, but a lot of women do now, and they see that it's low, and then they go to the provider, and the provider doesn't care about the ones they take at home. They want to see the ones. That's the issue. It's the ones they're taking at the appointments. What do you do then? What is your advice?
My advice, I mean, everything that you said is great, and make sure you're allotted 10 minutes to go through those relaxation exercises. And if that doesn't work, then I really believe that women can track their own blood pressure at home, take notes of it, bring those sheets to their provider, and that should be respected because we have the tool now to do it. There's so many good home monitoring blood pressure cuffs, just like women monitor their own blood sugar. We can do these things. We don't need somebody else doing it to us. It's like that's something we can manage ourselves, and it doesn't need to be done by a doctor.
I guess the benefit of doing that is that the woman herself knows her blood pressure is actually low.
Right.
And she needn't make any big grand birth decisions or induction decisions around the reading when she knows the reading herself because she's done that herself. It's ridiculous that we have to. The fact that we're even saying to women, take your blood pressure at home. Could you imagine telling women in the 50s or 60s? If you just step outside of this culture we're in, that's crazy. Take this at home to prove that you're not so stressed at the appointments that that's not throwing off your reading.
Hey there, all you amazing, strong, and beautiful women, especially you new moms and moms-to-be. I'm Taylor, co-founder and CEO of Vitality.
And I'm Taylor's sister, Chloe, co-founder and chief design officer. We started Vitality to encourage and empower everyone to live a vibrant life. We're all about supporting women, especially on the journey to motherhood.
When I was pregnant, I really struggled to find comfy leggings that I could wear all day, every day. So we set out to make the best maternity pants out there. We took those pain points and designed pieces that were supportive and comfortable, including details like a high-rise fit, underbelly seam, raw cut hems, and to top it off, we have an embedded silicone panel that acts like a built-in suspension system for your low back, which is the first of its kind.
So we designed this line in our Marshmallow Soft Cloud 2 fabric in not only a maternity pant, but a volley and biker short as well.
Let me tell you, all of these pieces are a game changer.
Just go to shopvitality.com.
And cherry on top, you guys can use code DOWNTOBIRTH at checkout to get 10% off your order.
10% off athleisure, designed for pregnancy, during pregnancy.
Down to Birth is sponsored by Postpartum Soothe. Recovering from a vaginal birth takes many women by surprise. Everyday activities like sitting, walking, and going to the bathroom can be uncomfortable. And Postpartum Soothe is just the remedy to support your healing and relieve discomfort. Postpartum Soothe is a 100% organic herbal blend that's applied to maternity pads in the days immediately following your birth, giving you all the benefits of a sitz bath 24/7. That's because herbs like comfrey leaf, uva ursi, and witch hazel are known for their antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory properties. Postpartum Soothe can be prepared anytime during the third trimester, and it makes a beautiful baby gift. It's a must for any woman seeking a faster, easier recovery from a vaginal birth. Visit postpartumsoothe.com. That's Postpartum Soothe, SOOTHE.com, and use promo code DOWNTOBIRTH. Did you know that 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, yet 95% of us are still deficient in key nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum? After a long time searching for the optimal prenatal nutrition product, we bring you Needed, a radically better prenatal vitamin. Needed's nutritional products offer nutrients that your body can utilize with doses at optimal versus bare minimum levels and are available in capsules and an easy-to-take vanilla powder, perfect for those moms with pill fatigue or nausea. Needed is a woman-founded company offering a superior nutritional product lineup backed by research, data, and insights from nearly 4,000 women's health experts. Needed offers premium supplements for every stage, from egg quality support for women trying to conceive to lactation support for breastfeeding. And you know, Cynthia and I, we love their botanical sleep and relaxation support packets before bedtime. So if you are looking for a radically different prenatal, head on over to thisisneeded.com and enter Down to Birth for 20% off your first order.
Hi, I had a question about waters rupturing. I wondered if you have any studies or know of any research that tells us what percentage of women's waters break and they go into labor within like an hour or two. And then what percentage of, you know, it doesn't happen right away. Labor doesn't start right away. You know, the cascade of intervention happens because labor hasn't really started. And then they're kind of confused and wondering what happened. But I just wanted to know. I'm very curious. Anyway, thank you for all of your wonderful work and for helping so many moms. And I love listening to you guys. Have a great day.
There's quite a bit of research out there about membranes releasing and when they release. We know the most common time is transition, or the time when a woman is about 10 centimeters. It's common sense because the baby starts to come through. I've never personally seen any research about when a woman goes into labor within an hour or two of membranes releasing, but there's plenty of research around both the 24-hour mark and the 28-hour mark. And when you look at all that research together, it shakes out at being around a 4 in 5 chance, even a little higher, that a woman will go into labor spontaneously within 24 or 28 hours. So maybe almost 1 in 5 women will go past that. It almost sounds like she's wondering, why doesn't labor begin, or what's going on, or what's going wrong? Nothing. It's just it's the progress of labor. But only 10 to 15% of women have membranes released at the beginning of labor in the first place. The majority of women experience that much later in the process.
You mean 10 to 15% of women experience the breaking of the water before labor has actually started?
Yes, that is what I...
And then when it does release, about half of women will go into labor within 12 hours. And then 95% by that 24 to 28 hour mark.
That's what ACOG says, yeah. And then there's another one that says like 86% chance within 24 hours. But yeah, ACOG did the 12-hour measure, and it was really, really high. And then they did the 28-hour. But I've never seen 1 to 2 hours after. No.
And that's not likely. It's not likely because it takes the body some time to realize, whoa, what's happened? There's a lot of shifts that have to happen for the body to kick into labor. So it's not going to be that instantaneous, and we shouldn't expect it to be. Nor should we feel that we have to rush off to the hospital when our water breaks. The important thing to take note of is, is your baby still moving? You do want to make sure that your baby's moving after your water breaks. Doesn't have to be the second your water breaks, but shortly after, make sure there's good movement, and make sure that the fluid color is worth looking at, right? You want it to be clear, and you should notify your provider, but you do not need to go, because labor will begin in those timeframes, most likely that we just discussed.
The exception would be GBS positive, but that there's a whole podcast episode we have dedicated to that anyway. Is that episode 183?
That is correct. I do know that one.
It's episode 183.
Hi, Tricia and Cynthia. I had a quick question about prenatal vitamins and whether or not you really think they are truly necessary. I am pregnant with my second and just want to make sure I'm doing everything I can to nourish myself this time around, especially with having a little one that's running around. But yeah, I'm just curious if prenatals are honestly necessary or if I should be getting most of my nutrition through my food and my diet. I just don't want to be spending a bunch of money on things that really aren't that vital. But if they are vital, I'm happy to take them. I'm curious what brand you would recommend. I do work out 6 times a week. I walk my dogs twice a day. So I'm a very, very active person. I just want to make sure I'm doing everything I can to set my body up for success and just keep this baby happy. Thank you.
Very inspiring.
Yeah, great. I mean, always food first. Like food is always going to be the best source of nutrition. We're never going to replicate good, healthy, wholesome food in supplement form. However, I do recommend that mothers take a prenatal vitamin prior to getting pregnant, throughout pregnancy, and even into postpartum, because it is really hard to eat enough nutritious food, considering that our environment and the way we manufacture food and a lot of the places we get food from is depleted in many of the vitamins and minerals that we need. So most people can benefit, pretty much everyone can benefit from some supplementation.
And a lot of those pharmaceutical ones, if you have a fancy corporate job and good insurance and your doctor prescribes one, that's probably the worst stuff out there. You can probably get a very good quality one from a natural food store. That's a lot cheaper and way better for your body.
Definitely do not take the prescription one that you get from your OB. You should take a prenatal vitamin that, like Cynthia said, has been vetted for good, the right levels of specific vitamins and one that is easily and well absorbed. We really love the company Needed. They make a great prenatal vitamin with all the right values, and they make a powder and a capsule. Taking a prenatal vitamin is going to improve your health and the health of your baby in pregnancy. And it is associated with decreased risk of certain conditions like preeclampsia, which we know is really common, but we know we need sufficient levels of vitamin D, which almost everybody is deficient in. We know we need sufficient levels of magnesium, which almost everybody is deficient in. And we know B vitamins, hard to get enough of through food alone. And of course, folate.
And you will get discounts for using our promo code Down to Birth. I do take their supplement every night, their restful sleep formula. I love it. It has theanine in it, which impresses me so much because it's a very expensive and very effective supplement I learned about on the Huberman Lab podcast. So I'm a big fan, even though I'm not taking prenatals.
I just got their cognitive formula.
Oh, interesting.
I'm really excited to try it. Yes. I saw it's new and you got to try it. I haven't tried it yet, but it has, it's for focus and memory, which
maybe you'll remember episode numbers now.
Maybe that'll just start happening.
I'll definitely try that.
All right. Just for the record, don't take your prenatals on an empty stomach when you're pregnant. Finding the perfect pregnancy and breastfeeding bra is no easy task. Your search is now over. Meet Davin and Adley, a mother-owned pumping, nursing, and maternity bra company with a unique, comfortable, and stylish cropped cami. This item is perfect to wear all day long from day one of your pregnancy right through the end of your breastfeeding journey and probably beyond. The Amelia cami makes pumping and breastfeeding easy while looking and feeling good on your body. It works seamlessly for both wearable pumps and flange pumps, and you can breastfeed in it. It also has a beautiful stretch lace back. You can sleep in it, dress up in it, go out in it, whatever you want to do in it. And trust us, the quality in this item and all of their items are top notch. They're soft, durable, and attractive. These bras will truly go the distance. Davin and Adley carry a gorgeous selection of maternity and nursing wear, and they have an innovative one-piece breast pad that we've never seen anywhere else. So no more losing those solo breast pads, ladies. Go ahead and check out the full collection of maternity and nursing items at davinandadley.com and use your promo code DOWNTOBIRTH to save 15%. All right, breastfeeding moms, do you want to know one of our all-time favorite items for your nursing journey? If you know us, you probably could guess it. Yep, it's the Silverette Nursing Cup. These little nipple heroes not only protect, but also heal because they're made of real silver. It is naturally antimicrobial, antifungal,
and anti-inflammatory. These little cups will be your best friend in the early sensitive weeks of breastfeeding your baby. And our favorite part is they last literally forever. You can pass them on just like you would a favorite piece of jewelry. Head on over to silveretteusa.com and use promo code DOWNTOBIRTH to save 15%.
Okay. That's it for our regular episode already. On to our extended. For those of us who are Apple subscribers, it's so easy to subscribe on Apple. Just click the button, support us. You will never hear an ad again. That's kind of fun. That's kind of interesting. I do that with a couple of podcasts. It's very nice. Or on Patreon.
Great bonus. And you get great bonus questions.
That's right. A longer Q&A. If you just press that button, it will automatically come into your Apple feed. And if you're not using Apple and you join us on Patreon, you get those episodes uploaded a couple days early, usually every month. So please consider enjoying longer Q&As and supporting our podcast.
Personal opinion, if you're trying to decide between the two, head on over to Patreon. There's so much you can get there in addition to the extended versions, ad-free, and our book club, and our very in-depth detailed live streams, which touch on topics that we don't always go into as much depth in these Q&As.
So with that said, on to quickies for those in the regular episode and on to extended for our subscribers.
Quickie number one. Do you have a specific app that you recommend to track ovulation?
I'm not into apps for anything that happens naturally within the body at all.
This is exactly why I selected this question for the quickies, because I totally agree with you.
Oh.
The best app is, you know, getting to know your own cervical mucus.
Right. Which isn't an app.
That's right.
That'd be a weird app.
Yeah. Just track your cycle on a calendar. Get to know the signs and symptoms of ovulation, and you don't need an app.
Try to get away from, turning conception into math and
yes.
tracking. It just takes a little of the spontaneous romance out of it. It is, I mean, it sounds unhelpful potentially, but honestly, this is rooted in oxytocin, connection, fun, play. Try to remember that and have fun with it.
And listen to the surges of your body. Like when you're ovulating, you're going to have a higher sex drive. You're going to feel that.
Unless your partner leaves a wet towel over a random door in a house.
That's true.
In which case,
pretty quick turn off.
It is not happening, no matter what the app says.
Okay. Is it true that male sperm swim faster, but female sperm live longer?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is true.
It is true.
Right. So what does that mean? What does that mean for
conception?
Getting pregnant?
Well, if you're going to ovulate in a few days, you're more likely to have a girl.
If you want a boy, if you want a girl, have sex prior to ovulation. If you want a boy, have sex at ovulation.
Or just have fun and trust the right baby is coming through you.
True. Oh, always a good point. Is there still time to switch an exclusively bottle-fed baby back to the breast at 3 months? Yes, it does get harder after 3 months, but it can definitely still be done. This is actually one scenario when sometimes a nipple shield is helpful because that baby's used to having silicone in their mouth. So if you put them on the bare nipple, the skin texture feels unusual to them. And if you put a nipple shield on there, they might go for it. And then you kind of get them used to feeding at the breast with the nipple shield. Then you take it away and then they trust the breast and they'll feed at the breast. Are kick counts necessary or is it undermining the trust in our body?
I think
great
it's
question.
Undermining the trust.
But
there are times it might make sense if your intuition is questioning whether things are okay, then it's reliable and it's good.
I think kick counts are a good idea. I think it's really important to be familiar with the movements of your baby. And if there's a variation in that, then that's an alert. And so there's no specific number. What it needs to be is what is normal for my baby over a specific period of time. This is one way that mothers can gauge the well-being of their baby in late pregnancy.
I think your answer makes more sense than mine. I said I would rely more on trust, but I am always thinking of the typical client I have who is going to be bent toward anxiety. And if she thinks it's her responsibility to count kicks, she's going to be awake at 3 in the morning counting them just one more time.
No, you don't do that. You don't do that. You just, you get familiar with the way your baby moves. And then maybe there's one specific time of day where you lay down, you have something sweet to drink, and you just get in tune with your baby's movements. And if it feels really unusual and abnormal, then maybe you do something about it. But you don't need to do it around the clock by any means. Would you recommend the midwife's brew instead of induction?
That's castor oil, right?
Right. I mean, yes.
Yeah, instead of Pitocin.
Instead of Pitocin,
yeah.
For sure. Yes. Quickie. Yes. The answer is yes. How would you gauge an older sibling's readiness to be present at a birth? Assume they're ready.
Assume they're ready. That if you approach them with worry and fear, don't worry about mommy, all of that, that's going to build anxiety. My example to my clients is, if your toddler were to watch you push heavy furniture across the room and you grunted really loud and you sweated, and they would not be remotely concerned. They know when to be worried about you and they know when not to. And I'm a woman whose four-year-old was at my second birth. He wasn't worried at all. And I got loud at the end pushing. They know when to worry. The sounds don't make them worry. Your behavior does, and any prep can. I didn't prep him in any particular way. I think I might have shown him a birth or two. He was totally cool and calm. They have to be taught to fear it. So if you try to allay their fears beforehand, you can actually make them consider whether they should fear it. So just, I would be careful about making too big a deal about it. I think it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. My favorite book about it is called Hello Baby by Jenny Overlin. It's beautiful.
I've heard animals and children are the best possible people to have at birth.
Makes sense.
They haven't been conditioned to fear it.
Right. Here we go. Closing with a personal question. When you are alone in the car, what volume is the music at?
I think it's loud enough for me to sing, but to still primarily hear the singer louder than myself.
Totally depends on the song for me. I mean, it's at normal volume if it's just a basic song, but if it's a song that really gets me going, I will crank it.
I remember being in the car with you and your daughter Ruby was in the back seat with her friend. We went shopping and my daughter Vanessa was in the back seat and Ruby was asking you about 45 times for an uber expensive fancy pair of pajamas for Christmas.
Oh yeah, roller rabbits.
She asked so many times, you cranked the music and you started singing really loud. It was wonderful.
It's a good way to end the conversation.
It was great.
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
All right.
That's it. Good.
That was great.
Episode. Thank you everyone for all your fabulous questions. Don't forget to call us at 802-438-3696 or 802-GET-DOWN.
Get down.
And if you want more of us, you know where to find us over on Patreon. And lastly, please, if you love the show, if you share it with a friend, just like you heard in the beginning of the episode, that can make a transformation in another woman's life. And your reviews on Apple Podcasts are so important and helpful. They mean a lot to us. They inspire us and they really do help the show get seen by more people. So please, if you're inclined to give us a 5-star review, head on over there and tap the 5th star, the 5 stars.
Otherwise, slowly back away from the phone.
Exactly. Otherwise, you can make a mistake.
We won't mention who did that a long time ago. Have a good one, everyone. See you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us at the Down to Birth Show. You can reach us at Down to Birth Show on Instagram or email us at contact@downtobirthshow.com. All of Cynthia's classes and Trisha's breastfeeding services are held live, online, serving women and couples everywhere.
Please remember, this information is made available to you for educational and informational purposes only. It is in no way a substitute for medical advice. For our full disclaimer, visit downtobirthshow.com/disclaimer. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, hear everyone and listen to yourself.
I do not leave the house without my water bottle ever. Mm-hmm. Never. Mm-hmm. And I like
good for you.
Glass.
Very
and
good.
I sometimes break it in places that I shouldn't. And that's
you sometimes do what?
Sometimes it's glass, so sometimes I break it.
Like, you go traveling in your car with glass?
One time I broke it at Orange Theory.
Oh, jeez. You know what? You just need to settle down.
It's an accident. It's glass.
It's like the lady with the fancy water bottle. The glass water bottle? Were you on a treadmill or something?
I broke it at the airport the other day, too.
Oh, my God. Why are you breaking your water bottle?
Well, sometimes it rolled out of the car onto the pavement, and it's glass.
So what happened at Orange Theory? Where did you break this glass?
The nice lady at the front desk cleaned it up.
Where did you break the glass?
In the cubby area.
Vestibule?
Where you take out.
Oh, good. It wasn't on a treadmill or something.
No.
I told you there's a woman at my local Orange Theory who comes in with a tall, hot cup of coffee every workout. And she goes to the treadmill how do you drink hot coffee?
On the treadmill. Is she walking or is she running?
She's running. She's hardcore running, lifts heavy weights.
But like, and drinks coffee while running.
How addicted to coffee are you that you can't do a class without hot coffee?
I can't imagine.
Water. It's honestly, I just want to stare and I don't let myself. I want to talk to her. I want to just say, can you just tell me about this? I just want to say to her, are you drinking it when you're like needed, like when you're thirsty, when you're hot and need a drink? Do you sip that hot coffee or do you drink that? I don't get it. Okay.
Okay, moving on.
Not that I need to get how other people live, but that really gets my attention.